Our next guest, Charlotte Iserby is her name, and I'm going to give a little more lengthy introduction than usual, because I've got to provide context. There's two massive, when I say massive, I mean massive stories to any show that is like this that Charlotte is right at the center of. And so I've got to provide some scope here and some circular thought so we can then go to the middle of this. Charlotte Iserby, her family, Thompsons, Charlotte Thompson Iserby, her father, her grandfather, involved in Skull and Bones. Now, people hearing Skull and Bones, you remember there's a movie about it. There's a Hollywood movie. There's been many other shows come out. The Order, this idea of the Order. When we talk, many people, we always say they are doing this. Who is they? Who is that they? When you start tracing this down and you go a lot of levels, and you eventually come back to a little known, very secretive club out of Yale University called Skull and Bones. Her family was involved with this. She didn't realize it growing up. She only came later in life, almost when her father was dead. And that discovery is very powerful. We'll get into that. Who is the Skull and Bones? What are they doing? Are they a secret society that's controlling the world? Are they just a club where they get together and go on their yachts on the weekend? What are they? Okay, that's one thing. And it's a massive story in and of itself. It's endangering. It's life risking. And Charlotte has done it. The other part, Charlotte, her life, some people just have that knack or are placed in whatever. They're almost like predestined or whatever you want to call it, that God has a plan for these people. And one of them is Charlotte. Not only was she connected this way to the Skull and Bones, she began to meet people and go in certain circles and became a very high-level Department of Education member of the Reagan administration. She had been introduced to the concept of schools, what's going on in schools, the takeover of schools from the 30s, really in earnest from the 30s. It probably even before then started, but 30s in earnest began. The 70s, it really accelerated into the 80s. A groundwork was being laid for the complete takeover of our school system. It's to the point now that teachers who are here now, even been here 20 years or so, they don't even see it because they've been inundated it from the very beginning. You got to go back 30, 40, 50 years. You know, my mother-in-law who taught for 30 years and been retired for 10, you know, you can talk to her and she could see it because she's, you know, got experience 40 plus years back on this. People who went to school, you know, they remember my uncle or my mother, she's passed now. She remembers saying the Lord's Prayer in school. You know, these guys, you can see that if you go back that far. But if you're just talking the last 20 years, all it is acceleration. You're right in the middle of this control grid of what education has become. Not a moral education, but something completely different. If I'm going to look to any institution in this country, obviously the goodness, the morality of the people, that's hard to define, and that's, you can't necessarily control that necessarily to a point. But if you're going to talk about a government institution that you want to point to that's been the bane of our existence and the source of our destruction, or would be the source of our destruction, it's the public, quote, government school system. That's my opinion. I believe that wholeheartedly. I will live and breathe with that. I will ride that till the wheels fall off. I know that. And Charlotte has been a whistleblower. If you are going to list over the last lifetime, the five or six most important whistleblowers in this movement, in this type of radio show, independent talk show, independent thought, if you would list the five or six, certainly top 10 whistleblowers, you're talking about Gary Allen, None Dare Call It Conspiracy, books written. I guess you can include G. Edward Griffin, the creature from Jekyll Island, about the Federal Reserve, what exactly the banking institute is. All these, the lies that we've been told. Gary Allen, None Dare Call It Conspiracy is probably the seminal book in this movement, the seminal book in the early 70s. Charlotte and I will discuss that also and what that did for both of us. But pretty soon after that, you're going to get to Deliberate Dumbing Down of America, Back to Basics, Charlotte Iserby, and what she has risked, the threats on her son's life and how they operate. We'll get into that. And by some miracle, by God's hand, how he's still alive. It is an honor to talk to Charlotte. It is a pleasure. And there's certain people, and she's one of them, and we're very excited to have her on. Charlotte Iserby, my God, welcome to the Power Hour.
Well, thank you very much, Daniel, and You know, you've put everything sort of in a box very well, and I don't know why I have, ever since I was sort of born, really been plopped in places, you know, not just situations like the Department of Ed, but, you know, the State Department, and then countries that I had no idea were going to turn out to be key countries where, you know, so, and then my own moving up to Maine in, what, 1972 or whatever, and that was when my eyes were, I mean, I just, actually, you know, I've never gotten, I always talk about the white horse I got on, and the horse is so dirty now, you know, that, what I found out here, when I went through change agent training, a teacher, retired master teacher, contacted me and liked what I was doing on the school board. I didn't even really know what I was doing again. That's Charlotte. I sort of moved backward. I don't know, backwards, forwards, up, down. I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm always in the middle of a gigantic plan to change our nation, the world. I'm always in the middle of it and looking around. And you know, just this morning, I was trained to be a change agent. You know, that was the biggie for me. I was taught at that change agent training, which was paid for by the master teacher, how to identify the resistors in my community. That came as such a shock to me because I was a resistor. And I lived in communist countries, and I'd been told by people getting out, you know, in long conversations, how their family members resisted, like in China and Vietnam, and what happened to them. So I never, ever, ever got over that change agent training. I suppose that was the key thing after having lived abroad for many years when I came back to the lovely state of Maine. And that teacher paid, retired teacher paid for me to go. And that was it for me. And I've never been able to get off it because what happened? I guess I was later on really identified, and my son, as resistors. And it just followed us all the way through from the 70s to 2016 when they actually thought he was dead, but he wasn't. You know, so I guess I just thought about that now. It sort of bounced back when I first found out about was being trained to become, to identify resistors, which shocked me. Then I move forward about 40 years, and I find out, yes, I had the same thing happen, my son, that the refugees coming out of China and North Vietnam were telling me about on the boat coming back from the Far East. They were escaping, telling me the stories about what happened to members of their family. So I, in effect, was like a boomerang. I was all of a sudden, we were, my son certainly, we understood what happens to resistors. I saw it. I saw what I was being trained about. I was trying to identify myself. And then I end up finding out that they identified me. And my son.
Let me interject here.
I'm just thinking that out right now. It's weird.
Yeah, let me interject. Let me interject for a second so people, they're hearing about this resistor training or change agent training. So put that in context. Was this in the 70s, I think, somebody sent you to? This is about education.
Yes.
You're being sent to a certain class, and in the class or in this conference, they're teaching you in the education system to identify resistors, and you were a resistor, and you're hearing this, and somebody sent you there because I guess they kind of knew what was going on. They wanted you to be aware of this.
A teacher, a master teacher who liked what I was doing on the school board. Everybody else in town, the newcomers, all hated me. The old-time mayors loved me. That's how I got elected. But, no, I was a master teacher who out of the blue called me, and I really hated to pick up the phone because usually it would be somebody beating up on me because I was going against the new global agenda, which covered everything from disgusting sex ed to values clarification, critical thinking, everything. And so I was going against it in the 70s, and they were ripping me apart. And then I got this phone call from a wonderful traditional master teacher taught all over the world. And she told me what I was looking at, but she said, I don't think you understand what you're looking at. I said, I don't. And so she said, I'm paying for you to find out. And I went. I found out.
Let me go backwards a little bit, backwards and forwards, because this is a big story. At that moment in time, that changed your whole perspective. You saw firsthand behind the curtain, so to speak. Toto basically pulled the curtain back, and you saw the wizard. And what the wizard was a takeover of values, and the takeover was already in full implementation.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. It had been planned since 1934, really. I mean, and even further back, you know, then you can go back to, you know, the different groups. You know, but 1934 was the watershed year when the Carnegie Corporation published this little book entitled Conclusions and Recommendations for the Social Studies. And in that book, which is, it's actually a PDF on the web, you can get it, Conclusions and Recommendations for the Social Studies. It's at my son's website, American Deception, as well. But in there, it says clearly that they would use, as you just said, it's education. They would, you know, these old geezers back then, the top internationalists who've always been, you know, Federal Reserve types and all this, they said that they would use the schools to change America from a capitalist economic system. They would use the schools to get rid of our capitalist economic system. And they also said in there, when you read it, you can read it for yourself, in some cases they would take our land. Well, that book is just absolute documentation for what has happened. That's past tense, right?
Let's again go backwards and hopefully provide. There's a lot of pieces to this, ladies and gentlemen. If you've never heard Charlotte before, I'm trying to make sure they get put together for you. Let's go back even further. You grew up, you were in the Northeast there. You went all over the world in different things when you were even young. Because of your family, you were able to meet a lot of other well-known families, and at some point in your life, you read the book None Dare Call It Conspiracy. I thought this was so fascinating. That's the book that really changed my life as far as my curve on understanding this. You had a similar experience. But also, when you talk about that experience, and two, when you read it and you saw these names, you know, for me, these people seem like far-off monsters or far-off characters or metaphors of themselves. They don't seem like real people. To you, when you read that, you knew these people. You knew their children. This was not a foreign thing. These were people that you knew and had dinner with. Talk about that experience.
Well, yeah, I mean, I was really know nothing when I got married. I married my Belgian husband in 1964, and then we had a yacht charter business, and he bought a schooner in Brittany and sailed it across the Atlantic to Grenada, and we lived there. That was very important, too. That's another highlight because of what happened in Grenada, a Stalinist regime ultimately there. But then we left Grenada and came to Maine, and bang, in my face, at this change agent training I went through, they used Ronald Havelock's guide to becoming a change agent, which I have still. They used that. They were samples of true stories, true out of the mouths of teachers who had implemented courses in drug ed, sex ed, death ed, everything, how to do it without, you know, and how to identify, okay, the resistors. Well, since I was on the school board and I was a resistor, that, you know, that just blew my mind. So anyway, I'm getting a little smarter. And I'm writing a lot of letters to the paper, and I get a call from a woman up north, a wonderful person, lot brighter than I was back then. And she said, Charlotte, you know, I love the letters you're writing in the paper, but I think you're missing something. And I said, I think I'm missing plenty. You know, I don't understand what I'm looking at. And she said, I've got a little book for you. I'll come on down. She lived about an hour away. She drove down, and she brought me Gary Allen's book, None Dare Call It Conspiracy. Well, you know, so I take it, and then I wait a few days before I get into it, and then I start getting into it. And I looked, and I saw all these names, as you just pointed out, of important families, and I had gone out with, you know, on dates in New York City, because I was working there in New York City, before I went out to the Far East. I went to the Far East in 1953. So it was probably around 1951, you know, that I was going out with all these guys. And they were very nice, and, you know, I was just a dodo, no nothing, zero. I knew nothing. What year was that? Yes. That's right, in the 50s. I knew nothing. And then we go forward to 73 or 5, I guess. I'm on the school board. I've gone to the change agent training. I'm writing letters. This woman calls. She brings me down the book. And I see all the names of the guys, the parents of the guys, that or the fathers, you know, the guys who I was dating. And I go, oh, you know, and then I take the book and I look at my Belgian, highly educated Belgian husband. I've been married to him for a good, 12 years by then? And we lived in the West Indies, and, you know, I was living a great life. I enjoyed working on the boat and charterers and everything, and a beautiful part of my life. And I looked at him and said, do you know anything about this? I gave him my husband, Gary Allen's book. And he looked at me and said, yeah, sure. I said, you know about this? And he said, yes. I said, well, how do you know about it? He said, well, I learned all about it in school. We'd been very well educated, Jesuit schools in Belgium, right?
Wow.
He had a history professor for 4 years. Every time the history professor would, you know, leave the boys, leave the room, every day he'd say, okay, bye-bye. Don't forget the Russian bear. No. So I said, well, why didn't you tell me? And he said, well, I thought you knew.
No, did you tell? No, they don't tell us these things in America, sweetheart.
Oh, you know, I mean, that's right. But that really, oh, dear Gary Allen, you know, I knew a lot of those guys from California and all the fantastic California crowd, you know, from Southern California, Jim Townsend, and they're all gone now. And when I went to work for Reagan, They found out I was going to go work for him.
Hold on 1 second. Let's go back. You read the book, and you're seeing these names of families that you knew, and you're saying, wow, I went out with this guy's son, and he's, if for anybody who's never read None Dare Call It Conspiracy, okay, Gary Allen worked with a former congressman, I think Larry Abraham. He had records involved with the United States records and congressional records, what have you, documents. Gary Allen and he worked together. They put the whole thing together, outlining basically the communist takeover, whatever word you want to use, the globalist takeover of the American system. This is the seminal book, the most important book, I would say, without question, on this type of information that's ever been. Yep. And so that's what this book is. So
this kind of information is absolutely critical, more so than anything except the Bible.
Yes. Yes. That's right. That's right. So what, again, I want to get back to you personally. You're reading these families' names. You knew these families. I mean, that's got to throw you for a loop. Like, oh my, you know, he was very, you probably thought, wow, he was very nice at dinner. I enjoy him. He seemed like a nice guy. I didn't know they were raven and wolves underneath. I mean, what goes through your mind?
Well, I'll tell you what's interesting there is when I was going out with them all, I was working in a big law firm in New York City, Davis Polk, too, which is totally involved in the global system, all the people at Davis Polk. And I was getting tired of these, not tired of these guys, I thought, is this what my life is really all about, that I'm just going to, you know, these fancy clubs and out for dinner and all the guys. I called them. I remember one of them was a really nice guy. I said, I can't stand all of you. You're just custards. You're all out of the same mold. And then it was during the Korean War, and I said, I'm going abroad. He said, what? He said, where are you going? I said, I'm going to Korea. I'm going to go. I want to get out of this environment. I want to find out about the rest of the country, people, you know, the GIs, the guys out there. I want to broaden my horizon from this with all these, I call them custards, really. It was more like Jell-O or something. I mean, they were all the same. They were just all the same. And not they were nice, but they were all the same. And so he gets upset with me, and he said, you can't do that. You're only 23 years old. And I said, I don't care. Well, anyway, my mother had been American Red Cross, always a volunteer when they're bringing the guys back from the front, you know, in Europe, the horrible war over there, bringing them into Mitchell Field, and she was a volunteer for Red Cross for 30, 40 years. And, you know, so I was sort of brought up with that around me, volunteerism. And so she thought it was just a good idea. Can you imagine my parents being so dumb? I mean,
yeah, that's
my father. You know, my father did cry when I left. This is the innocent Skull and Bones father, right? My grandfather wasn't innocent at all. But my father, he gets pretty upset about his little daughter leaving. Well, Mom thought it was a wonderful idea. So down, she takes me down to Washington. I end up, you know, over in. They change my orders. I end up at a Strategic Air Command base on Guam. And that was really great. There were only about 30 American women on the island. We had something like 1,000 officers and servicemen. You know, that, I mean, can you imagine? And I was there for a year. And that, you know, so I did that. And then they got terrified because my parents got pretty terrified because then they shipped me up to Hokkaido, Shitose, Hokkaido, an Air Force base. And that was very interesting because there were no American, no women around for these guys. So there were, you know, whorehouses galore all outside the basin. So Life magazine does a cover story, big picture, and it's called Shitose, Hokkaido, the sex circus of the world.
Mm.
And my parents see that.
Oh my God! There's the music. Hang tight. Hang tight. Yeah, hang tight, Charlotte. Stay tuned. We'll be on the other side of the break. We'll get more into this, more into details with the one and only Charlotte Iserby, ladies and gentlemen. ThePowerHour.com. Stay tuned.